1057 ESPN.
Playing ESPN Rochester on radio.com.
You're back in the sports bar with Danger and Battaglia as we get ready for Sunday. The Bills traveling to Miami, their first of two meetings against the Dolphins. Alan Papar, lead writer of MiamiDolphins.com, joining us, and we really have no reason to talk, Alan, because the Bills figured out the solution, how to figure out the Dolphins, just sign their ex-punter. Alan, how are you?
I'm fine. How are you? That's a lot of guys you guys are picking up who are ex-Dolphin players. I just heard about Matt Darr, Jordan Phillips, Charles Clay. What am I forgetting? I know I'm forgetting some of them.
Well, you know, the Phillips, he's been very good in his role for Buffalo. Why did the Dolphins punt on him so quickly there, Alan?
Well, I'm going to guess it wasn't so quickly, that there was probably a lot of stuff behind the scenes that was going on. The thing with Jordan Phillips is it was always flashed at times since he was brought here as a second-round pick out of Oklahoma, but the consistency just never was there, and it was he's a guy where you're always thinking, man, this guy could be really, really good. And every couple of games he makes a play, and they, yeah, that's what I'm talking about. But the consistency wasn't there, and there was some sideline episode that happened right before the Dolphins cut him, and that may have been the final straw.
He's Alan Papar, lead writer for MiamiDolphins.com, joining us in the sports bar, Danger and Battaglia, ESPN Rochester. Alan, both my co-host Gene and I are wondering how Miami let Indianapolis off the hook. My guess is conservative play calling hurt the Dolphins down the stretch, but you cover the team and you were at the game. Tell us what you saw.
Yeah, I mean, that's the easy way to look at it. The problem is they were playing a really good team, and all of a sudden they stopped being productive on offense. Regardless of how they approach things, and certainly the argument could be made that they could have been more aggressive. But then again, that's always easy to do after the fact. If they decide to throw the ball on their second to last series and they connect and it produces first downs, everybody's talking about, wow, that was really smart because the Colts would have expected them to run. So again, it's very easy to bash a play calling when it doesn't work. The bigger issue was they just didn't do anything. I mean, they had the ball twice. After they had scored their touchdown to go up 24-14, didn't do a thing. And then defensively, they just couldn't hold off the Colts. There were some breakdowns defensively, and I can remember one that allowed T.Y. Hilton to turn like a short completion into a really long gain. And then on the key play of the game, Dolphins had very good pressure on Andrew Luck, who found a way to escape, moved up in the pocket, and found the guy wide open because one of the DBs stepped up to cover against Luck scrambling and left the guy open. And again, this was a case of Colts made the plays down the stretch, Dolphins didn't, but there's no question that it's a game the Dolphins might look back later on and kick themselves for having let it slip away, just as was the case when they lost at Cincinnati in week 5.
I'm sure, too, and if you're trying to figure out the playoff picture, that's the team you needed to get by, and if it comes down to direct head-to-head, that might cost you. When you're looking at the Dolphins at 5-6 and you're trying to come up with wins, I'm pretty sure you're looking at the two Buffalo matchups, right? I mean, what are the realistic possibilities that this team can pull it together here in December and perhaps sneak in as the sixth seed?
Oh, I'm not going to be easy, that's for sure, because now they find themselves behind two teams. There was a cluster of five teams at 5-5 entering last weekend, and then it helped that Cincinnati lost, Tennessee lost on Monday night, Baltimore had already won, and then there was a key game between Indianapolis and the Dolphins, and one of those teams was going to put themselves in better position at 6-5. Unfortunately for the Dolphins, it didn't work out. Absolutely, there's no question that I know the coaches and the players are not doing it, but those who covered the team look at those two Buffalo games as if they are practically must wins if the Dolphins are going to make the playoffs. Beyond that, they also have Jacksonville here, and it's been a catastrophe of a season for the Jaguars. That's also a game you figure Dolphins have to win that game, and then their other two games are New England here, and they're at Minnesota, and you figure, well, maybe they can still win one of those. They've beaten the Patriots here four of the last five times. Let's say they pull that off. You go 4-1, then that gets you to 9-7, and 9-7 has been known to get a team in the playoffs. So it's doable. What happened with the Colts is it basically cut the Dolphins' margin for to a microscopic level, but Not impossible, but it's not going to be easy.
Alan Pupar is the lead writer at MiamiDolphins.com. You can read his work there. He's joining us now in the Sports Bar, Danger and Battaglia on ESPN Rochester. Alan, the quarterback position in the state of Florida has been an absolute mess all season long, whether it's Miami or Jacksonville or Tampa Bay. I'm curious as to how Tannehill looked in his return last week.
He looked pretty solid, actually. The thing was, his best pass might have been the first pass he threw, which was a dart right up the middle to rookie tight end Durham Smythe, who was between three Colts defenders, and Tannehill put that thing on a rope. Perfect throw. Beyond that throw, there wasn't a whole lot downfield, but the Dolphins, we have to say, are dealing with a depleted receiver core because of all the injuries, with Albert Wilson out for the year, Jakeem Grant out for the year. Danny Amendola went down in the game against the Colts. So there's limited resource at that position. By far the two most dynamic offensive players the Dolphins have right now are their two running backs, Kenyon Drake and Frank Gore. So it does limit what you can do downfield. That said, Tannehill actually looks solid. Again, there are those who will tell you maybe the Dolphins should have given him a shot to let it loose on one of those final two drives to try to get that key first down that might have made the difference in the outcome. But all in all, for his first game back, yeah, he looks solid.
Is it fair to say he's a divisive figure, Ryan Tannehill, in Miami? Do people have an opinion one way or another about Tannehill? Because I see somebody that maybe just needs to stay healthy here, Alan. But I read comments from, you know, the one player's wife there last year, Mika, whatever her name was, Grimes. I mean, is he a divisive figure in South Florida these days?
Yeah, I'm not sure divisive does it justice. You look at the word polarizing in the dictionary, you might see his picture. Mm. There are tons of opinions on him. The thing is, he's always been solid. He's always shown you flashes of maybe he can become something really, really good. And yet it's never been there on a consistent basis. So this is where it creates a lot of frustration, and it's not as if he's a new guy. He's been there since 2012. And now on top of everything else, you throw in the injuries that he's dealt with, which obviously are not, I mean, it's not a function of him being a bad quarterback, but again, you get to 30 years old and you miss the last month of 2016, you miss all of 2017, and he missed six games or was it five games this year because of the shoulder injury. So you put all those factors in, and yes, you know, without a doubt, he is a very divisive figure in South Florida.
I'll throw another divisive figure at you, Adam Gase. I mean, you know, this is a coach now that's been there long enough that was tasked with working with Ryan Tannehill, getting the most out of Ryan Tannehill, yet granted the injuries have kind of taken that off track. But, I mean, what kind of rope is he hanging from right now in Miami? Is it playoffs or bust for Ryan Gase? I'm sorry, for Adam Gase?
I really don't believe so. But I think, again, there was a lot of noise after the game on Sunday, without question, because of how it ended. And you mentioned that accurately, I might add, that a lot has been tied to Ryan Tannehill because that's been his guy, and he stood behind them publicly on more than one occasion. That being said, I don't think it's quite playoff or bust. I think we have to see how this plays out in the final weeks of the regular season.
Alan Pupar is a lead writer for MiamiDolphins.com, our guest here in the Sports Bar. Alan, we have a story up here in Western New York today, and we're kind of new to this whole, okay, let's build a new stadium and let's shake down the government for money sort of deal. We're going through this for the first time, essentially, here, as the Pagula is announcing today that they've hired this high-powered consultant. I'm just curious to get your perspective on this. As somebody who has seen one franchise, the Dolphins, go the route of renovating their own football stadium, but then I read stories of how bad the deal was for the taxpayers down there, you know, in your neck of the woods, where with the Miami Marlins, and how that baseball stadium has been an albatross. What advice or what can we learn from what has happened down in South Florida as far as the government funding these publicly financed stadiums?
Oh, I think that's outside my realm of expertise to dive into those questions. I would tell you probably avoid anything that resembles the Marlins field. Would be the one piece of advice I would have on that topic.
Alan Papar is the lead writer at MiamiDolphins.com. You can read his work at MiamiDolphins.com as we get you ready for the Bills and the Dolphins Sunday morning with pregame starting at 9 o'clock here on ESPN Rochester. What is Frank Gore putting in his water, and how can we get some of that?
I don't know if it's Gatorade or Powerade or whatever, whatever helps him work out, because that's what the guy does. He just works out like a maniac. And he's talking about how basically he gauges whether he wants to come back for another season, pretty much whether he can hang with younger guys when he works out. And it was funny because was it Monday, he was asked once again about how much pride he was taking in his yards per carry average, which I think is like 4.4, 4.5, considering his advanced age for a running back, and he couldn't help but like kind of give a smile, like, are you going to come at me with that again? So he doesn't see himself as a 35-year-old running back, and he doesn't look like a 35-year-old running back. You see him cut through the line of scrimmage, and his vision is ridiculous. But the guy just works like a maniac in the off season, and it wouldn't shock me even at 35. He's got, if you're talking about playing for to accomplish something or prove something, he's got absolutely no reason to come back. But he loves the game. I know he mentioned last week, he talked to another outlet about how he wants to stay near the game when he's done playing. But he's certainly highly productive. So, I mean, it's really quite remarkable to see.
You brought up at the top of the interview, Alan, how the Bills have these ex-Dolphins. You have an ex-Bill down there, being Kiko Alonso. We forget about him, him having that nice rookie season up in Buffalo, and then he gets shipped off to Philadelphia. And we haven't heard from LeSean McCoy, but who knows? That might use it as a sense of motivation. But from up here, it seems like Kiko Alonso, he's been really productive for the Dolphins here these last couple of years.
I will tell you how productive he's been right now. I would tell you be more than likely he's going to wind up in the Pro Bowl. He's been really, really, really good. The Dolphin defense has given up yardage this season, but they've also taken the ball away quite a bit, and Alonzo's been in the middle of it more often than not. Him and cornerback Xavien Howard on defense have been big playmakers. And then even last week, Alonzo was on special teams for a punt block against the Colts and got his hand on the punt. I mean, no, he's really, really, really played well. Off the top of my head, I can tell you the other one who comes to mind is Nick O'Leary, who was a Dolphin signed early this season. He was on the practice squad, and Adam Gase revealed that basically all the defensive players were like, Coach, get this guy on the 53 already. I mean, and then they moved him up to the 53. He made a really quick impact, playing well, kind of been pretty quiet the last couple of weeks. And by the way, did you know his grandfather was Jack Nicklaus?
We heard that storyline too. Also, Ryan Fitzpatrick went to Harvard. I don't know if you heard that, Alan.
No way.
Yeah, there's a handful of these.
Chris Hogan played lacrosse.
Just in case you didn't know, Chris Hogan played lacrosse.
And he's nicknamed 7-Eleven.
Oh, yeah, because he's always open, of course. Alan, I'm curious. You brought up, Gene brought up Kiko Alonso. You're talking about the Dolphins' defense. I mean, certainly there have been moments this season, and the Dolphins, to the point where they're like, we're going to have to make wholesale changes to this defense. We're going to fire the defensive coordinator. It's been bad. It's been kind of up and down, I would say, for the season for the Dolphins. But overall, a bottom half of the league in terms of where they rank as a defense, as a unit. I'm wondering about matchups that the Bills might be able to exploit, and the one that comes to my mind immediately, just based on recency, is the tight end matchup. The tight ends can get over on the Dolphins, given that three touchdowns were given up by the Dolphins D to Jack Doyle and Eric Ebron on Sunday.
Yeah, and this isn't new, sadly, for the Dolphins. This went on last year too. I remember a couple of games where tight ends had really big games against the Dolphins. Jared Cook comes to mind. Nick O'Leary caught a touchdown pass against the Dolphins in the season finale last year. That has been a bugaboo for the Dolphin defense for a while now. And we're going back to Kiko Alonso. A lot of fingers were pointed in his direction as far as that was concerned as being the cause last year. And I can tell you that Adam Gase didn't appreciate that on a questioning. He was saying it's more complicated than that. And the truth is it has been more complicated than that, because if you look at the guy closest to the tight end catching pass against the Dolphins, it's usually a different guy. So I'm not quite sure if it's a scheme issue or guys not fulfilling their assignments. But yes, that's been a major issue for the Dolphins defense.
Alan Poupar. You can read his work, MiamiDolphins.com, our guest here in the sports bar. We were so into the draft, as you can imagine, with the Bills taking a quarterback, and we were paying attention to Miami. Minkah Fitzpatrick, how has he performed in his rookie season, would you say, Alan?
Very, very, very well. I would tell you in all fairness that the game against the Colts was not his best performance, but I would say overall he's been really impressive. He's played outside cornerback. He's played some safety. He's played some nickel corner. Tackles really, really well. Has been really good in coverage. He looks like he's a guy who's going to be in the Pro Bowl more than once in his career. And I'm almost thinking that maybe the biggest one of the offseason assignments for the Dolphins coaching staff on defense is going to be figuring out, okay, where should we play this guy? There's value in him being able to play a lot of different positions, but one, you can't help but wonder how good can he get if you just stick him in one spot and leave him there.
Alan Poupar is your lead writer for MiamiDolphins.com. You can read his work there at MiamiDolphins.com. Alan, I know how busy you are. We know you have some drama that you're dealing with off the air that we want to get you back to. We really appreciate you giving us some time and hope you have a great weekend. All right, bud?
Hey, you leave my car out of this, all right?
I know. How can you have car problems? If you're in Miami, do you really ever have any problems?
Well, it's going to be 48 early tomorrow morning.
That's oh, my God.
Very, very oh, no.
Dramatic for us down here.
Oh, my God. Wow.
Please send good wishes.
Yeah, no sympathy.
Thoughts.
Enjoy your weekend, bud.
All right, you do likewise.
Alan Poupar, lead writer, MiamiDolphins.com, joining us in the sports bar to give us the Dolphins skinny.
It's funny. People had opinions about Tyrod. You think people have opinions down there about Tannehill?
You don't want to be in that position, right? I mean, as an NFL franchise, you don't want to be in a position where your quarterback is divisive. It kills the fan base. It kills the locker room. It kills the coaching staff.
Who would be a good example of we stuck with
Jay Cutler?
He's divisive, but he never won. Unless you consider getting to the NFC Championship game as like some gold star. No, a divisive quarterback who you stuck with eventually figured it out. I mean, it's a little retroactive, but when the Saints signed Drew Brees, nobody thought Drew Brees would become Drew Brees.
Listen, Rich Gannon had a nice run with the Raiders, right? I mean, before he was with the Raiders, he was a journeyman.
But he wasn't. The fan base is sick of this guy.
Like, he sucks. Everybody would say he sucks. He's not good. He's a backup. That's it. That's all he is.
The Miami fan base is tired of Tannehill. I would think the majority of Dolphin fans want to move on and wonder, why didn't we take a quarterback this past year? We could have moved up. We could have gotten Rosen or any one of these guys. Or Lamar Jackson was sitting there.
At some point, you got to wonder, okay, we have a big enough sample size. We know what we have. And he's just one of those guys, like a Jay Cutler. And by the way, the only coach that ever really supposedly got through to Jay Cutler
was Adam Gase.
Adam Gase. Yeah. So, you know, he's working. He has a little bit of a history working with polarizing quarterbacks. But he's given you just enough to make you believe, oh, he's our guy. Did you see that? Did you see that throw? Did you see the stats he put up? Not a winner. I mean, if your ceiling is Tony Romo, it's not good enough. It's not, unless you want a career in broadcasting. It's not good enough.
But I guess my question is, you're holding out hope.
Speaking of, to answer your original question, by the way, Tony Romo would be one of those quarterbacks. Right? When Tony Romo was in Dallas?
Oh, yeah. Cowboy fans had to know, we can't win a playoff game with this guy. But even Romo's better than Tannehill, I would say. Put Romo ahead. Romo's numbers,
behind
way better
the best than offensive line in football? Yeah.
But
Tony Romo didn't win anything. Didn't win anything. What was it? One playoff appearance? No, multiple playoff appearances, like three playoff appearances, I want to say, right?
Lost to the Giants, lost to the rain in Seattle.
Seahawks and then Green Bay, the Dez catch, right?
Yeah.
If that's the ceiling, not good enough. All right, if you missed that conversation with Alan Poupar from MiamiDolphins.com, we'll get it for you on demand shortly at ESPNRochester.com. Up next, we serve up today's top NFL stories in bite-sized form, NFL appetizers, brought to you exclusively by Alex's Place. Alex's Place, making mouth-watering barbecue baby back ribs for over 25 years. Online at alexsribs.com. We go around the league next in the Sports Bar. Danger and Battaglia, ESPN Rochester.
If you're a Grinch or a Scrooge, this news is huge. It's time to light up the holiday season. Pack up the kids and head to the Dome Arena on Calkins Road in Henrietta. Switch on the holiday soundtrack and sing along as you drive through the brand new Rochester Festival of Lights and North Pole Village to benefit the Salvation Army. Ooh and ah your way through a million dazzling lights and festive holiday displays. Start a new tradition and make colorful new holiday memories. But wait, this is an outdoor indoor experience. Park the car and head into the Dome for the special indoor light show and take a stroll through the North Pole Village where the kids can meet Santa. Take scenic family holiday photos, decorate stockings and cookies, jump around the bounce houses and more. Open every Friday, Saturday and Sunday night in December. The Rochester Festival of Lights in North Pole Village is sponsored by Victor Chevrolet, located in the heart of Victor. Find new roads. And by MVP Healthcare. More convenient, more supportive, more personal. Get in the holiday spirit. Find dates and details on Facebook or at RochesterFestivalOfLights.com.